This is the audio recording of the Rivana Elevation Part 3 by Adoran Care. This recording is brought to you free and read by the author. Please donate to the Free Books for Life course today. The music for this recording, Shadows Can Walk by Real, is provided by Real. Please follow and subscribe to Real wherever music streams near you. Thank you so much.
Rivana Elevation Part 3. The benchmark bemoans the neglect, spearheaded in scars, an illusion for all health and risk of demise. It is the earthlessness that bemoans its charm, its scarcity above the mark. It is the dissension and stasis, the correspondence at the edge of the animation, the regal unknown, defeated, without the repercussion of fact. Bella watched Alan pace back and forth in great agitation, pondering whether she should take a more decisive military action and seated him before voicing the condition of Dick's earth. They had raised Dick's body back to her, and against hope, the worst was yet preventable. Nathan was silent in his seat, reservedly hopeless, as if her announcement was expected. After all, he had been the first aid to Dick in the hopes to save him. He had also been her understudy and best helped through the earth crisis. He knew the unexpected was to be expected. She decided against the inhumane military approach, the forced sedation, and walked to stand behind Nathan's chair. She looked down at him briefly, holding his eyes steadily with the usual expression of signaling for a helping hand. Nathan stood and walked with her towards Harlan. "I'm sorry," she started. "No," Harlan cried. Bella exhaled. "Dick is dead." "We have to kill him," Alan said without acknowledging her statement. Bella felt a bit of relief that he wasn't going to storm into her room to try to kill Dylan. Was he asking her permission? She had kept Dylan locked away elsewhere. "I told you not to take him along with you, and I told you why," she said as calmly as she could manage. Alan stopped pacing and held Viola's eyes fully. "The fool cheated on you with a help buddy with a head the size of a bloated hip. I don't think you need him. He's a danger to us all." She gained silence briefly and spoke as indifferently as she could manage. "I told you not to take him, not to expose him to any degree of cold or coldness." Alan frowned. "What the hell does that mean?" Bella stared at him. "What the hell do you actually know about the conditions for help sufferers, Alan?" Alan deepened his frown. "Are you saying he didn't cheat on you with a bullet ape?" Bella had taken little time to reconsider the medical reasoning she needed to be accurate, but she took a second in a moment to consider the personal morality that was once the conditioning for respectable human relationships. Did Dylan cheat or not, despite his nature and predisposition for such? And if he did or did not, whatever could his nature, the half-human, half-creature was turning out to be, mean for the nature of their relationship? Would any half-born sufferer have been a better human than human Dylan was? She spoke in a restrained tone. "I am saying he goes into a strict regression mode when he comes into contact with cold and coldness, and he's had to seek alternative measures to realign back to the vacated mode. I am currently finding a way to help them stop. It doesn't matter if he cheated or not, because he couldn't help himself. You saw the condition of the HEP2 female. Was he able to reason anything in that mode?" Alan was silent for a few seconds, thinking. "Are you saying he didn't kill Dick?" "That's not what she's saying," Nathan interjected. "Shut up, Nathan," Harlan scolded. "I'd rather hear from Dr. Moore." The rogue presided in deafening silence before she spoke. He couldn't have killed Dick any more than he could have intentionally and rationally chosen to sleep with a head buddy. And you imagine there was no intent on his part to achieve such animalistic aims? He's still bloody hell an animal, Alan said. Viola hesitated before speaking. I can tell you that it lacked the innate coordination that makes up for the mostly human instinct for it, including neural instinct, visual, auditory, rational, and such. All in disarray, it couldn't have seen the head buddy for what she was, and for the same reasons it couldn't have seen the head buddy for what she was, he couldn't have seen Dick for what he was relative to him. While his instinct was to kill, his instinct could never have been clearly or humanely deciphered for the murder of Dick. He did not kill Dick, Alan asked, eyes wide. He did not know what he was doing when he killed Dick, she announced. Alan belted out a sarcastic laugh. Ah! We're going to kill him, right? There was silence in the room, the other two people in it choosing to maintain silence. Alan deepened his frown, drew his head back slightly. We're not going to let that sucker live after what he did to Dig, are we? He exhaled. Any more than we can keep the girls alive for what they are capable of doing under the same circumstances, unless I and Dylan figure out how to stop the same thing from happening again. I'll kill him, Dr. Moore, Alan said, narrowing his eyes. I promise you, a reasonable time, I will. There is a great illusion against the natural conception that artificial trenches may be able to overcome natural rifts. Depressions add to digression as the brain may be to mindless states. The irony cry was almost deafening to every ear within the proximity. He had emerged from Naden, but it could as well have been altered by one of the three sleeping beauties in the Ravana elevation. The head she recognized instantly as belonging to one of the sleeping beauties stood, blotted and drained of blood in a round plate onto a round tray. Viola moved towards the detached head with deliberate intent as she heard Alan's accusatory voice behind her. He did it, he said. Viola stopped in her tracks, closed her eyes and exhaled. He has been wounded since he got back. I made sure of it, Alan. Are we sure of that? Alan asked, prompting her to turn around in an accusatory manner and face him. He held her eyes rigidly. I know we did it. You know a lot you have neither proof nor expertise for, Alan, she replied. Alan shook his head. No one else could have done it. No one else open going around here is capable of such savagery. She widened her eyes. Are we sure about that, Alan? Alan was silenced briefly. She spoke in a low, subdued tone. Since I am the only medical professional here, will you and Nathan please retreat to my office so I can do the job of inspecting the crime scene so I can brief you on the real nature of this murder? Alan retreated reluctantly. Nathan did the same seconds later. She turned to face the bloody crime scene, noticing the trail of blood on the floor as her eyes met the widely opened eyes of the deadhead, like some dead-end bees mirroring its interface on its surfaces, a frightening tale. She noticed the triangular wedges, the pattern at the base of the neck, suggesting a sharp cutting instrument had been used to do the beheading. The enigma for the duper may be as dope for the Pope, a hoodwink done not for glory, but for con. Her office could hardly contain all three of them, but she took the time to explain her findings. Alan was agitated, swearing, sweating profusely, and little she was about to say or do came down. incoherent in deliberate vocalization within the small phases of time while she spoke. He repeated, "I'll kill him." That a malefactor benefits from the maleficence is as a maladjustment from the norm. The norm is an anomaly of normalcy. The development phase for the new transformation for the Ravana elevation was extremely short-spanned, as Dylan had further perfected a time phase for the catalyst before she induced the second lengthy sleep, before the mission that killed Dick. The awakening for the females was a world away from that for Dylan. The boys held onto pistols instead of automatic and semi-automatic rifles they had compared in Dylan's awakening with. They were welcomed with open arms and smiles. The romance blossomed quite easily as Alan chose Eve, and after a long and useless argument with Nathan, he chose Naomi, the unpaired female. Dylan's lengthy induced sleep continued. The essences of a biopsychological tension was known the tangent, ultimate to its extremes, and those minimal to its composure. In tension, there is discord in the assurance of life. Mortality is diminishing, chaotic, and expiring. The assurance is never merely banal, common stock, or unremarkable. The assurance of the tension is life, the force behind it, mind, vicious in its unmasking. On the evening of Dylan's awakening, she cooked up a storm, and a storm it was. The Dinan was supposed to make his reintroduction into society an unchallenging experience. On the insistence she sat them, they were seated. She sat Dylan across the table from her, the girls on the two opposing sides to him, the men were closer to her. The ladies were at their best, making small talk, agreeing admiringly with their assigned mates' statements, smiling at the whim of any attention paid to them. Were they overly grateful for being chosen, self-aware, and human again? Was there some love bug in the air she had forgotten to catch, or one that simply evaded her existence? Was it some love potion that accidentally missed her plate? Was this some estrogen-related side effect of the Ravana elevation? They hid in silence for a while before Alan, unable to help himself on the subject, spoke. "Why is Dr. Morris sitting on the other edge? Nobody ever sits there." She exhaled, holding his eyes. "I didn't want to separate the new corpus." He glanced in Dylan's direction. "It didn't, or you didn't." She hesitated briefly. "I didn't." "And what the hell does it do around here?" Alan asked, raising his voice. Dylan spoke. "Alan, I want to say sorry for..." "Too little, too late," Alan snapped. "Can you ever forgive me?" Dylan asked. Dylan shrugged. "Too late. All I think about is killing you." "If you do that, what becomes of you?" Dylan asked. Alan flew into a fury instantly, standing abruptly to stare Dylan down as Eve held onto his hands to calm his fury. "I should have put a bullet in your brain there and there and saved all this misery, you piece of shit. Dropped you like a bag of shit you are." "Alan, please," Beulah pleaded. Alan shook his head. "Don't, Dr. Moore. The fool thinks he is the only important person in this room. Hell, in this world as well. He's full of shit, unpredictable, and a danger to us all." "Alan, please sit down," Beulah pleaded, touching his arm in an attempt to appease him. Alan stiffened. He had never seen him as angry as he appeared in the moment. He flung a hand off his arm. "He killed one of us. It's dangerous to all of us." Beulah glanced in Dylan's direction with the knowledge that the maltreatment and disregard for her kindness in a moment could trigger him. It did. Dylan raised his voice. Sit down, Alan, and behave like a proper gentleman. Be careful at the table. Alan glanced towards Beola. All I ever asked for was a reason to kill this fool, he said, and began to walk towards Dylan. Beola got on her feet and rushed after him. I never really needed a reason, after all. I just needed to watch Dick die. Please stop, he had Beola plead behind him, but he didn't stop. He appeared determined, unperturbed, with the intent behind his actions. What the hell are you doing? Dylan hacked as Alan got close to him. But Alan was unmoved on the move. He pointed the Glock 19 he held at Dylan's chest and fired once. Beola screamed in shock as Alan turned around and walked past him. Ah! He is truly human! No edema should stop his death! He commented as he pulled Eve towards the door. Beola focused on saving Dylan's life. What is expected is thrown out and celebrated, like some outgrowth enlarged for the sake of the psyche. What changes the world makes its part, forms its importance, find its way to shape a trace hardly noticeable, highly remarkable. The inevitable is a reckoning. The bullet had missed his heart by a few inches. Beola mourned the thought induction of the sleep cycle. It implies the inevitable. Dylan was weak and as susceptible to harm as any human may be, and his need for unreasoned sources of pleasure in times of pain was a greater weakness than any ordinary human's. He was, without him, less vulnerable, highly respected, and untouchable. With him, she was coupled in intellectual life and less alone. What was to give? He had been at his bedside day and night until his faint heartbeat became pronounced. She had neglected the rest of the world for him as she debated the future in the proximity of Alan, Nathan, the ladies, sin, crime, and revenge. On the seventh day of nursing him, she pondered the state of her fears. In a state of nature, what truly gave? Who made the rules dictating life and death? Despite the real sacrifices she had made, was the dictate of everyday life here to kill or be killed? Despite the sustainability, it was perfectly clear what feat she had made possible. How could the extreme moral dictate of some chaotic state of nature still be applicable? Has she failed? Has she not achieved the impossible mostly without any man's help? Lost in her contemplation, she heard the loud bang of Nathan knocking against the lab walls. He had done so in the last 7 days. She had been nursing Dylan. She ignored his presence. It was apparent he wasn't willing to go away in this instance. She slid a note under the door for him, gave him a few minutes for a response before going back to retrieve his reply. Something happened, and I needed your help as usual. I can't do this on my own. Please help. She stared down the dark edges of the observatory room. Motioned for Nathan to lower the visibility threshold so she could see him. He did, and as he came into view on the other side of the room, his hands were clenched together as if in some hopeless prayer mode as he mouthed, I need your help. She opened the bedside drawer and removed the Glock 17 automatic she found easy to handle, turned around and walked towards the door. The Glock 17 met Nathan's forehead after she coded the password for the door. She motioned him into the room, but he glanced towards Dylan's unconscious form on the bed and retained his stance without voicing his thoughts. He shook his head instead, moving forward slightly to press the nozzle of the Glock further into the muscles of his forehead. She started him. Please, he mouthed again. She motioned for him in turn to turn around, pressed the nozzle onto the base of his brain stem and pushed him forward with it. He led her down the hall towards a familiar turn, one she hardly ever tracked. She frowned. Why are we going towards Alan's quarters? Nathan remained silent. She didn't question him further. Their walk wasn't on some infinitesimal time loop. As Beola got to the open door leading into Alan's room, she stood rigidly still between the hinges. Two severed heads, Alan's and Eve's. both appearing to have been severed with the same instrument she had suspected and last beheaded, sat on two opposing sides of the bed, to the east and to the west. She stood still, as though transfixed by the sight, for a while, wondering what part of the world she existed in, if the world offered sanity, and if she was ever going to come out of it. Appendages detached are phantoms in the making, a set of conditions troubling at the art of their illusion aside from reality. Nathan and Beulah sat facing each other in our office, but overwhelmed with fear, misery, and mystery. "We never considered the girls," Beulah said. Nathan was pensive, thoughtful, and aloof. His reaction was slow. "But we considered Dr. Morris quite considerably and deservedly." Beulah narrowed her eyes, stoning in him. "Like the very last time this happened, and he was sleeping?" Nathan shook his head and sighed softly. "I am beginning to think he sleepwalks in his sleep." She closed her eyes and opened it slowly. "It could be one of the girls. This could be some side effect of the newer version of your Ravana Elevation project." Nathan shrugged. "It becomes inevitable. It could be him as well. Phase one or phase two, does it matter when effects are horrible?" "It does if we cannot know what's triggering the killing spree," she replied. "I have not had the opportunity to be good as hell." Nathan shook his head morosely. "I'm afraid, Dr. Moore, if you don't figure it out soon, we'll all be dead." She exhaled as they held onto each other's eyes in silent misery. She spoke in a low, strained tone. "We have to tread carefully here. Or indeed, as you say it, we'll all be dead." Nathan nodded, studying Beulah briefly. "Let's consider this from a detective's perspective, because there's seemingly no solution for this at the moment. You're usually more apt and on your feet about things like this." She exhaled, shaking her head slowly. "It's shocking and overwhelming. If it's not them, it's us." Silence presided in the room. "If it's not me, it's you," Nathan expanded. "It's not me," she announced. "It's not me," Nathan added. Silence presided in the room. Beulah spoke. "Our declaration did not resolve the probability of either of us being the killer." Nathan remained silent. "My suspicion is on the girl," Beulah announced. Nathan raised an eyebrow. "You can't possibly mean Arlen's, so it has to be mine, my girl?" She nodded. "It has to be your girl." They observed silence briefly as Nathan considered the possibility. "I believe the sleeping beauty monster, that is Dr. Morris, has been sleepwalking in his sleep while you were on duty, not during our overwatching him." She frowned. "Is that some indirect implication of the probability I knew that this was going to happen?" Nathan remained silent. "And that I let it happen?" Beulah concluded. Nathan hesitated. "And that you could have inadvertently allowed it to happen?" Beulah hesitated briefly, thinking. "You could be doing the same with dead Queen Nun the Deader over there as well." Nathan exhaled, holding her eyes steadily, leaned forward and spoke in a soft tone. "Doesn't that make Dr. Morris the king of deader than dead?" She closed her eyes, thinking. "Then we must be each other's investigative counsel in this case, so we're not biased." Nathan nodded in agreement. "That we must be, or the murderer will be the last person standing." She exhaled. "Then we must interview each other's significant other vigorously before we reconvene. Dylan is in the lab. Can you tell Naomi I'd like to see her?" Nathan remained unresponsive. briefly lowering his eyes before raising them toward ours. He spoke in a low, emotional tone. "There's something I have to tell you." She frowned, studying his sudden change in demeanor. "Tell me." He engaged her eyes fully. "What happens if you catch your significant other in a compromising position?" She raised an eyebrow. "You want relationship advice in a moment like this?" He shook his head slightly. "No. It's something else. I caught Naomi and Dr. Morris having sex. A bowl of spilled ice on the floor next to them." Pilla swallowed her heart alongside her pride. "You're suggesting she did that to get back at you?" He raised an eyebrow, shrugged. "Does it matter?" A fixed atmosphere cannot a world make. A difference without an instance of a moment never can time make. He paced the observation room relentlessly. He had sensed her anger when he found the key code of the lab changed and her back to him when he knocked on the door. She was seething, not with rage, but a more subdued emotion. She could hardly quench her grief, as anger was a less qualifying emotion for the occasion. He slept by her door at the insistence of her indifference. When she opened the door, his back met the floor. She watched him crawl upward until their eyes met. "She brought a bowl of ice," he said. She felt fully aggrieved, her every nerve ending throbbing in the moment, her hairy extremity culminating against the neural pathology in her brain. Her mind seemed mentally estranged from the instinctual hinges of her brain. Was she becoming toxically indifferent or hopeless? He was human enough to know why she locked him out, yet inhuman to instinctual dictates against his rational perceptions. "Can this ever be your fault?" she asked. "Technically, yes," he replied. "This would make you sort of like a machine, wouldn't it?" she asked indifferently. He exhaled. "An error-prone, sustainable machine, yes." Adversity conquers delight, depresses the mind, progresses despite, provokes insight. Never does it harbor pride without its decline, nevertheless recline undignified. Her eyes opened slowly at the bequest of a pain suspense enveloping her being. Her wrist felt restricted, her mind throbbing with a complex combination of migraine with aura and vestibular migraine. She was totally overwhelmed with the emergence of some state of hopeless incapacitation, a purgatory of agony, perpetually bordering on unreachable pleasures, bargaining on the possibility of death or salvation, aching for some utopia to be met in some afterlife. She opened her eyes to an unbelievable vision of hell within some hell. She was on her knees, hands tied to opposing extremes. Her psychological sensitivity felt drugged and weakened. Nita sat in his seat quietly, watching her awakening. Her eyes, she felt, could be playing tricks on her. She could be inside a dream within a dream, dragged on by some psychosomatic sensation of pain and the seeming longevity of hope in the moment. There was that restrained sensation by her ankles. Her attempt to move her legs proved the assumptions about her predicament correct. Her ankles were restrained. Her words were slightly slowed as she spoke. "What the hell are you doing?" she asked. Her words echoing in her mind as if her mind was emptied of brain matter. He remained silent. "Untie me!" she commanded, reaching like a scared snake against her restraint. He held her eyes fully. "So what can happen?" She tried at the failure of sharpening her neural instinct at a loss. Her headache was bulging, her vision slightly blurry, her strength against her restraint non-existent. She had doubted Nathan was the one seated, the one who spoke to her indifferently. as he couldn't bear to leave her in some helpless state of pain and suffering. But Nathan's voice was a distinctive, soothing voice. Why wasn't he unchaining her, freeing her? Untie me, she commanded. He placed his elbows on his knees, his palms on his chin, and stared at her. Untie me, she commanded. How he loved her, he thought. The woman, the doctor, the human. Where's Dylan? She asked. He retained silence. She exhaled. Did you kill him? He frowned, twisting his mouth in the process. Why would I do that when I have Naomi? I am untouched by the cheating action with Dr. Morris. What about you? How did you feel about the cheating situation? She shrugged her pain shoulder. Well, get over it. We? He asked. She nodded. I am Dylan, as you would say, of you and Naomi. We have to move on and away from this. He squinted, studying her. Really? She nodded. Yeah, really? Why am I tied up, Nathan? Did Dylan do this? Dylan? He asked. She stared at him. Yes, Dylan, where's Naomi? Again silent for a few seconds. What the hell is going on? She asked. It's crazy, he commented, hesitating briefly, staring at her. God, is Dylan going at it? She asked. He leaned forward slightly. I don't know. Should we look in the bathroom? She felt a burgeoning surge of relief that felt artificial, chemical. Was she drugged under and slowly being revived with a painkiller? Whenever, however, Nathan could have qualified for a pound of no milk gin. When I realize you're going to have to be awake and alert for this, he replied. She frowned. What? Are we going to the bathroom? Are they coming here? Untie me, Nathan. Nathan sat back in his chair, holding her high steadily, fully. You know what to say about love? She shook her head vigorously. No. 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 He scowled. What? 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 I mean, what is love anyway? Is it preservation? Is it? Because I have a different philosophy regarding love. I don't know what it is anymore. Is that a sign of the times that you are alive and tied up rather than dead at the moment because of the compound interest of who you are and the fact that I can't help but love you? She was silent briefly. Where's Dylan and Naomi? She asked in a low, subdued tone. He raised his eyebrows. I don't know, Dr. Moore. Where are they? Are they in the bathroom? She shivered visibly. I don't know, Nathan, are they? Nathan exhaled and sat back in his chair. This I am certain of, Dr. Moore. Naomi is dead. Beheaded with her detached head in the bathroom. Do you know where Dr. Morris is? She stiffened. Then it's between you and Dylan! Nita managed a sarcastic smile. By this, do you mean the murders? She nodded. Yeah, the murders! Isn't that why I'm tied up? You want to kill me too? He leaned forward slowly. I don't know, Dr. Moore. Where's Dr. Morris? She shook her head. I don't know. Is it you? Did you tie me up? He shrugged. If you tell me where he is, I should be able to ask him. I don't know where he is, she replied. He stood at her. Could he be in the bathroom with Naomi? Did you check the bathroom? She asked. He shrugged. I don't know, did you? She shook her head. Nathan, will you stop circumventing whatever the hell happened and just tell me what the hell is going on?
He narrowed his eyes before they met us fully. There's actually a way to capture this seeming conundrum, Dr. Moore. There are two people in a science lab in a persistent existential purgatory, and there are two heads in the bathroom without existential bodies. Welcome to the cycle of progress, Dr. Moore. She screamed. I led her. She quieted and began to cry. He led her. Her cry slowly turned to whimpers. Why did you kill Dylan? She asked in a breathless, helpless tone. He raised his eyebrows. I don't know, Dr. Moore, did I? She closed her eyes slowly, painfully. He placed his elbows to his knees, his palm to his chin, his fingers across his mouth before he spoke in a near whisper. It was extremely difficult to imagine or foresee, Dr. Moore. It had to be you. She dropped her head. He gained silence for a few seconds. When? He asked. She didn't raise her head. She didn't respond. When? It was the first time Nathan ever yelled at her. It dawned on her that the dynamics of their relationship had changed. She slowly raised her head, feigning ignorance in the moment. With what? He narrowed his eyes steadily. She felt exposed, vulnerable, to a thing she hadn't experienced in too long. When were you infected? She began to whimper, slowly. Stop the crap, he snapped. Answer the simple question, Dr. Moore. You should know. When were you infected? She pondered the situation she was in at the moment as he repeated the question in an harsher tone. When Dylan was sleeping, she replied. When Dr. Morris was sleeping, Nathan asked. She closed her eyes and opened them slowly. In the beginning, she replied. He widened his eyes. Dear universe, since Dr. Morris slept, that is such a long time to uphold a lie. She exhaled. It is. She resigned sadly, pondering her current situation and the sacrifices she had to make. I have to take my medications, she said. Sure, he responded. I don't want you to turn into a monster on my watch now, would I? Why did all this fail? Lila shook her head, an overwhelming sensation of failure enveloping her. Nathan shook his head, overwhelmed with emotions as well. I know you know, Dr. Moore, why did all this fail? I walked with you at the worst of times. I definitely deserve to know. She raised her head to hold his eyes, agreeing that he deserved to know. The pain-pleasure principle inductance between the EP and HEA, which necessitates psychoneurological differentials, a range of actionable initiatives, is fundamentally flawed. Essentially fraud. The injectability of possible cataclysmic actions like beheading people in some involuntary psychotic state ensures that between the actionable marker of the essential state to the same reality of the Ravana elevated itself, there was no real vectorization. The vectorization of the Ravana elevation is an unnaturally false vectorization. This disaster was inevitable. Nathan closed his eyes painfully and slowly opened them. Why are you better than Dylan? He hesitated briefly. I caught mine early and treated it early. He nodded, as an expert doctor would. Why is your strain deadlier? She frowned. What? He exhaled as he held her eyes fully. Yours is deadlier than theirs in a different sort of way. I am certain you are aware of that fact. She hesitated briefly, thinking, considering, reconsidering. She spoke in a low, resigned tone. Mine is more of a disorder, more psychological than material. That you were pretending to be one of us and not the murderer you are, he asked. She swallowed her pain and pride in the moment. It is much more controllable, symptomatic. Like some sort of phonic grandstanding, an appeal to humanity Only when there is order, the psychological disorder can manifest anytime uncontrollably, or rather subconsciously.
You do remember, he asked in an accusatory tone.
She hesitated briefly. I have some post-incidental memories, yes.
Again silence for a few seconds.
Why did you kill Dylan?
She closed her eyes painfully and opened it slowly.
You never met a true scientist, Nathan, until you have met one who believes the smell of something is incorrect, erroneous maybe, fallacious maybe, inaccurate perhaps, or maybe unnatural is the smell of death. Something was widely off the mark with Dylan. Besides, I just couldn't take the pain anymore, she replied. An uncomfortable silence presided in the room. Nathan exhaled and sat back in his seat. It had to be you, he muttered to himself. How did you know? She asked in a low, resigned tone. His hand met the side of his face as he pondered briefly. I compared the medical doctor I knew to the creature you have become. The statement you used to make kept replaying in my mind. No one with a decent ounce of wisdom in life and nature would ever seek vengeance for the sake of vengeance. You could never have killed Dr. Morris, even if he betrayed you. The beloved medical doctor I knew died so a creature can exist. A powerful, highly unpredictable, deadly creature. The silence that ensued stung the hair like some pungent grip of death. Nathan spoke. I am now left with the pain of living you alive rather than dead and ensuring you don't get to kill me. This is the cycle of now. This is the way we end. She shook her head. This can't be me. This isn't good for either of us. He held her eyes fully. Good or bad, this is the way we end from the life you created, from the catastrophe you were.
Production Shadows Can Walk by Real is provided by Real. Please follow and subscribe to Real on Spotify, Amazon Music, YouTube Music, Pandora, Deezer, and more. Thank you.